Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Well, we get no punch. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelke, Lance Mehta with you. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll take your calls and get your reaction to the Giants 16-10 defeat at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. The Giants dropped to 3-7 on the year. Hopes of the playoffs all but gone, barring a spectacular collapse by the rest of the conference, an unbelievable winning streak by the Giants, likely not going to happen. So the Giants now look ahead to the Cowboys next week. They come to MetLife Stadium on Sunday Night Football, trying to put things together and try to end this season on a bit of a high note. And Lance, I think a couple things with this game that were interesting is, number one, the Giants' defense actually played well in this game. This game reminded me a lot of the first half against the Colts, where the offense couldn't get a whole lot going, but the defense kept them in the game for much of the contest.
Well, when you hold your opponent to 16 points, John, you figure that you're going to be in a very good position to win this game. I don't think you could have asked anything else from this defense. The fact that the San Francisco 49ers got into the red zone four times,
yep,
and they were 0-for-4. They had to settle for field goals, and one was also a botched snap opportunity for San Francisco. So when you look at the whole complete picture, I think the Giants' defense held its own. I think that they definitely gave up some yardage, but it was almost that bend but don't break type of philosophy where San Francisco moved the football down the field, had good favorable field position as a result of Eli Manning's interceptions. However, the Giants kept them out of the end zone. And when you do that, you give your offense an opportunity. The offense just couldn't capitalize.
They figured out a way to stop the read option. Colin Kaepernick just 24 yards on 8 rushes. They controlled the Niners' traditional running game. I thought the Niners should have ran the ball more in that game. Not sure why they didn't. Frank Gore, 19 rushes, 95 yards. Calls Hyde, 9 for 95. So, pretty good job against the run. But the story today, Lance, has to be the quarterback and the Giants' offense. Eli Manning threw 5 interceptions in this game, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot of Eli Manning hate calls over the course of the next 1 hour. And I'm not saying he didn't make bad decisions. I'm not saying he didn't play his worst game of the year. Of course, all those things are true. However, you have to look at why he threw those interceptions, and a good amount of them, to me, have to do with the offensive line, where he saw pressure, had to get rid of the football a little bit, and once that internal clock gets sped up for a quarterback, bad things are going to happen. And we've seen the last couple of weeks this pass protection slowly begin to fall apart, and once Justin Pugh went out of this game, Lance, that right side of the offensive line with Charles Brown and John Jerry had trouble blocking a lot of those stunts and twists the Niners were running. Very simple games that you'll see every week, and the Giants did prepare for during the week. And Eli was on his back an awful lot in this game.
Yeah, Jerry and Brown would go right, and the Niners' defensive linemen would go left. So it was a very rough performance, as you noted, on the right side of the line. The offensive line as a group, though, struggled immensely.
Yeah.
And they had been so good in pass protection over the last few weeks, John. It was the fact that they couldn't run the football. That's where they weren't being a physical group at the point of attack. All of a sudden, a breakdown in pass protection, that was part of the reason why Eli Manning was put in a lot of precarious situations. I think, though, it was a combination of both, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot of phone calls saying Eli Manning's decision-making was horrendous, and it was a bad decision time and time again. However, there were a few interceptions where I think you got to give the San Francisco 49ers defense credit. For example, the one when Chris Borland,
great play by Borland.
That was a tremendous play. Great anticipation on the part of the Niners linebacker. Got his hands right in the passing lane and took the ball away. There was also a play where he threw it down the left sideline. I believe that was the third pick. And Reuben Randall, if you watch the replay, was held on his route.
He got hooked around the waist. Correct.
So it looks like when you're watching the play, why does Reuben Randall just give up on his route and then he leaves Eli Manning out to drive? Then you see the replay. Well, there was some physical activity there.
No, Randall should have fought through that physical
activity,
continued on where he was going. The second interception is the one where Eli said he wanted back. He kind of tried to hold the ball back, which is why it was such a low throw. It was intended for Randall, but it was a throw he wanted back and tried to bring back. before that pick happened. That was a bad one. The fourth interception was on that little in cut by Reuben Randall, where that was when the pass rush really made him rush the throw.
That's
threw it too far
hit.
Ahead of Randall, and he gets intercepted. And then the fifth one was a situation where he's trying to squeeze it in there at the goal line. I think that was looking for Parker, correct?
Presley Parker
and it got deflected out of his hands.
Yeah, Devontae Johnson.
And into the linebacker's hands, and they got the fifth interception there for Eli Manning. Obviously did not play well. Every quarterback has one of these games every year. You've seen Tom Brady have a game like this. The Broncos only put up 7 points yesterday. Peyton Manning did not play well. Tony Romo had his first game of the year against the 49ers when he threw those three picks. You're going to have these games from week to week. It happened to come in a week where the Giants' defense did their part and the Giants' offense couldn't do theirs. One point I want to make, Lance, and we talked about this over the course of the season, the way this Giants' schedule stacked up, the first half of the season, once you got past the Lions and Cardinals, you saw a group of games where the Giants were playing against pretty weak defenses. You had the Texans, who are okay. They were probably the best of the group. But the Falcons have a very poor defense. The Redskins had a very poor defense. The Eagles and Cowboys had middling defenses. And the Colts, frankly, have an okay defense. They're an average defense. And I think the offense got some things going in those games. They played pretty well. But the last couple weeks now, when you're playing against two of the better defenses in the league, and you have Dallas coming to town next week, who, again, is probably around league average, the offense has struggled a little bit to put touchdowns up against some of the better defenses in the league.
Well, they've struggled to run the football just about everybody.
Oh, well, that's
against
true.
Everybody,
yep.
With the exception of that three-game winning streak. But I guess if you want to pinpoint, they've had games where, you know, they've been able to throw the ball through the air consistently versus games where it's been very up and down, a lot of three-and-outs, punts, turnovers, and so forth. You know, that showcases the disparity in the defenses
right.
that they've gone up against throughout the course of this season. And the fact that these last two games, John, you put up 17 against Seattle, and then you only put up 10 against San Francisco. What was the big storyline that Tom Coughlin and company were talking about? Even Jerry Reese, you got to put more points on the board because you can't expect to put that up every week and even have a legitimate chance. The fact that they were in this game, John, I mean, it's yeah. absolutely amazing. If you look at this final score, you know, San Francisco was a much more opportunistic team yesterday and was in a position where they could have blown the Giants out. The defense kept them
oh, yeah.
around.
And Colin Kaepernick, I didn't think, played very well. He played a bad game. And the Giants defense did keep him in the contest. I want to touch on a couple specific things in this game here before we move forward. Lance, I don't know if you agree with me. I'm not sure why that Odell Beckham reach over the line for the first down wasn't overturned. I thought it was pretty clear the ball got over the line. But that being said, and Tom Coughlin said it after the game, you get the fourth and an inch. You got to figure out a way to get the first down. I thought it was interesting that they decided to run to the right side of the line behind John Jerry.
That's a troubling part.
Well, yeah, but I guess that shows what kind of faith they have in Richburg to block a guy like Justin Smith, who's on the right side of the defensive line up. They want to run away from Justin Smith. So I thought that was interesting, but you have to be able to get an inch. You have to.
I don't think it's asking for too much
to
try to continue that drive. I agree with you. I think that Odell Beckham got the first down. I don't
Bad
know
call.
What they saw in the replay. I think he made a tremendous play with that second effort
yep.
to have the thought process to switch hands, reach out to try to get to the chain. I mean, that was a great play on his part. The one thing, and not to get completely off topic, Don, that I just want to point out, and we've seen it the last few weeks, and we've been talking about players needing to play above the X's and O's. Odell Beckham is a wide receiver that makes plays for his quarterback.
How about that catch on the sideline where he juggled
Jump
it and
ball.
He managed to stay in bounds? Whew.
Makes plays for Whew. His quarterback. That's what they need across the board. He's a guy, you can't question his effort. And he was criticized by the media, you know, for throwing his helmet down after
that's
the game.
Nonsense.
I mean, that was just pure frustration. I don't think there's anything to read into that.
I like that.
Yeah.
I want to
see
a guy
fire.
Mad that he didn't make the play. What's wrong with that? It's not like they drew a penalty. That
no,
the game was over.
Did hurt the team. In any
he gets
way.
Up. He's mad. He didn't make the catch. He throws his helmet. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with it.
I was actually surprised that Tom Coughlin was even asked about that in the post-game press conference. I mean, the guy's frustrated. He dropped the pass on the last play of the game.
And, you know, it's funny. I asked Odell about it in the post-game in the locker room just because I wanted to make sure. Because he stayed down for a while, and I thought maybe he might have hurt himself. So I asked him, you know, did you throw the helmet just out of frustration? And he answered me as though I was, like, accusing him of doing something wrong. He's like, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I apologize. I'm like, I wasn't upset that you threw – I didn't say it. We're on the air live. But I wasn't criticizing the kid for throwing his helmet. I just thought he'd stay down for a little while before he threw his helmet. I wanted to make sure he wasn't hurt. But you're right. Beckham played a heck of a game. And you know what? Reuben Randall, I know some of the interceptions were thrown in his direction. He had 7 catches for 112 yards. And I thought it was interesting, Lance. The Giants have gone with a short passing game most of this year. And from what I saw on tape, from what I watched after the game and when I talked to Carl Banks, who watched some of the game too, and some of the other people that watched the tape already since the game ended yesterday afternoon. The Niners played a lot of really pressure press man-to-man. They got into the wide receiver's face at the line of scrimmage, and they did not allow a lot of those quick, short, easy passes to get through, which is why Eli Manning had to do some of those deeper drops, which allowed the Niner defensive line to get to Eli Manning. I think what we've seen this year, the two games they've had a lot of issues protecting the quarterback, Philly and San Francisco, those teams took away a lot of those quick drop short passes that the Giants want
to
make.
Well, and any offense needs to be able to adjust and adapt. Yeah. And that was evident yesterday. I think it was nice to see Eli Manning hit Reuben Randall in stride, John, because what impressed me about yesterday's performance, it's not so much the 112 yards, it's the fact that he got yardage after the catch.
He did.
And that was nowhere to be found consistently throughout the course of this season. And that was one of the entities that we talked about. Now, it's not a matter of Randall being involved where he gets 10 catches every game. It's the fact that when you hit Reuben Randall, he's got to do something after the catch,
yeah,
as opposed to just settling for a 5 or a 7-yard gain. Yesterday, he answered the call. That was nice to see. You just hope he could build off of it.
Hey, for a guy that was averaging only 7 or 8 yards a catch before the game came yesterday, he averaged 16 per catch in the game yesterday. So that's exactly what you need. Eli finished 22 of 46 with one touchdown and 5 picks, a 36 rating, completed under 50% of his passes. So that's going to bring his season-long numbers down. I'll bring those up in just a second. One other series of plays I want to get to before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Obviously, a huge play in the game, Lance, was the first and goal from the 4-yard line. The Giants trying to get in there with under 6 minutes to go on the clock, I think, something like that. I think about 5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And they go with 3 fade routes, followed by that little short pass to try to get into Parker for the touchdown. And I know Tom Coughlin's taking a lot of heat for it, and Ben McAdoo is taking heat for that. And after the game, Tom Coughlin says, well, in retrospect, it's easy to say we should have run the ball. And a lot of people said, well, you have to run the ball. I got a number for you. And this is an internal number, and no one else has it. When the Giants have had it first and goal inside the 5 this year, they've had the ball inside the 5-yard line in that situation 14 times. How many touchdowns have they scored?
I'm going to say probably 1.
14.
They scored 14
The
times?
Giants are 14 of 14
wow.
First and goal inside the 5 this year.
Didn't think it was that explosive.
14 for 14. So I have a hard time getting on these guys for their play calling inside the 5-yard line when they're 14 for 14 this year, goal to go inside the 5-yard line.
Well, there you go. I think that they then go by the numbers, they go by the statistics.
And the fades have worked. And look.
Well, they have. They certainly have a good success rate in that department.
And look, you remember this. I'm sure the callers do too. I've ranted against fade routes. I hate fade routes. I think they're a low percentage play. I'm not a fan of theirs. But the bottom line is, and I've said this earlier in the year, they've worked for the Giants this year. Beckham's done it. Randall's done it a couple times. And Larry Donnell specifically has been really good catching those fade routes. So those plays have worked. And Larry Donnell after the game said, I had 2 hands on the ball. I should have caught the pass. Reuben Randall said to me in the postgame, I should have caught the pass. So obviously the play calls aren't bad if the players think they should have made the plays.
Well, I don't think it was a terrible throw. I mean, Donnell had it. He just couldn't complete the catch.
And Randall got his hand on it, too.
So, I mean, from that respect, I don't think it was a horrendous decision by Eli Manning. Would it have killed them if they ran it maybe on the first down to give themselves some different options on second and third? Possibly. Outside of that, I mean, it's hard to really criticize them. The bottom line is you have 3-4 pass opportunities within the 4-yard line.
Make a play.
You should be able to punch that in.
And you're talking about making plays above the X's and O's. They did it. Make the plays above the X's and O's in that situation.
Well, there were 2 plays above the X's and O's yesterday. Well, maybe I'll give Reuben Randall a credit for a catch or 2. Odell Beckham's catch on the sideline to get them in the red zone at the 4. And Larry Donnell's catch, which was a 30-yard grab, if you recall, with pass interference.
On the pass interference.
That was an impressive catch.
Yep.
Those 2, that's playing above the X's and O's. Everybody else, you know, you did enough to move the chains here or there, but not enough to make a game-changing type of play. And that's why the offense was only able to walk away with 10 points. You get Eli Manning and company in the red zone, in San Francisco territory, 3 times, and all of them resulting in interceptions when you could have walked away with 3 points here or there, hey, that's the difference in winning and losing a football game.
By the way, Rashad Jennings did not make much of a difference as the Giants running back. As Bob Papa said to me this morning, he turned those minus 1-yard runs by Andre Williams into 2-yard runs for Rashad Jennings. So maybe he made a couple yards difference here or there, but obviously it's the offensive line simply not giving these guys room to run the ball. I thought that was interesting. I thought, quite frankly, the officials were inconsistent calling contact down the field. I thought the pass interference on Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie was a little borderline. He did face guard. He didn't look back at the quarterback, and I understand that's why they called the penalty, and I understand why they did it, but I didn't think there was quite enough contact to warrant the flag coming out. And I thought later in the game, I thought Donnell was interfered with on the pass he dropped in the end zone on the fade route. I thought Niner player face guarded him the same way Dominic Rogers Camardi face guarded the Niner player, and I thought that could have been interference. And I thought they allowed a lot of contact down the field.
Play too on the interception.
That too. That's another one. That perfect example. And I think they allowed some contact down the field that we've seen them call penalties on for most of the season.
Well, we expected though coming into the regular season, it's going to fluctuate.
Yep.
Because at the bottom line,
and it depends on the crew.
Yeah, it's the interpretation of the officials. It is the rule, and it reads one way, but still, these are human beings interpreting the rules, so it's going to fluctuate. I don't think it was anything out of the norm yesterday compared to what has transpired in other NFL games this season. There certainly were some calls the Giants would have liked. As far as the DRC play is concerned, had he turned and faced the ball, he would have done a better job selling to the officials that there's no reason they should have thrown the flag.
He might have picked the damn thing off if he
looked
back.
Absolutely. That would have been another bonus. The fact that he didn't turn around and then sort of, you know, had a little touchy-feely play, it made it difficult for the official to not throw the flag under
and
those circumstances.
The final thing that I think really killed the Giants in this game, what were the two areas on defense the Niners really struggled at this year? It was third down defense where
and
they ranked 26th, and the red zone defense where they ranked 30th coming into this game. Yesterday, the Giants completed just 40% of their third down, 6 of 15, and they were 1 of 3 getting touchdowns inside the red zone, 33%. You want to know why you lost the game? Those two numbers right there.
Capitalizing on the weaknesses of the opponent. Probably if you go back to the trends throughout the course of the season as we look up the schedule, John, I would say the Giants, it's very rare that they actually took advantage of an opponent's weakness, and that's part
of the strategy. That's a good point, actually. I never thought about that. I'll have to go back and take a peek at that. That's not a bad point.
The only thing I'll say is the Seahawks game last week, Seattle was very good protecting the football, and the Giants were able to force turnovers.
So they actually attacked the strength there. They attacked the strength in that case.
So they were able to do that. Outside of that, you know, it's very hard to look back at a game. I mean, even the Atlanta game, when the offensive line was banged up, it's not as if the Giants had 10 sacks in that game. And it's not as if they shut down an Atlanta offense that had been battling through some injuries. So, you know, there's a number of games you can look at and you say, hey, the Giants could have really taken advantage of this opponent.
How about the fact that the Falcons are in first place at 4-6 in the NFC South, by the way?
How about that?
How about that? I mean, you can't make this stuff up in the
league
this week.
NFC West a few years ago.
I know.
When Seattle won with a 7-9
record. 7-9, yep. And one other note I want to throw out there, and the offensive line, we brought this up off the top of the show, they were a huge culprit here. Couldn't run it, couldn't protect your quarterback. I don't know how you throw Charles Brown out there at starting tackle again next week the way he played in this game. I don't know how you do it. I think either Pugh's got to get back with that quad injury, which is a mysterious quad injury. He kind of felt it in last week's game, but he practiced all week, then he felt it again on game day. Sounds a little odd to me, but maybe get Jeff Schwartz back, put him out of right tackle then, maybe you put Jerry out of right tackle. I don't know how you can go in the next week against Dallas with them seeing what happened on that game tape on the right side of that Giants offensive line, and you roll those guys out there again next week. I don't know how you do it.
Well, the one guy that I would like to see put out there, and I understand he's been dealing with a knee injury, is Adam Snyder.
Paul Dottino brought that up to me this morning. I think
that's the guy, John, I think you have to turn to.
He's more of a guard, though.
Well, then mix and match at this point.
You can't move Jerry to right tackle if you want.
Best personnel out there. I think you're in a position, John, at this point of the season, where you're not worried about, has this guy played this many games at this position?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Put the five best offensive linemen out on the field to make sure you protect your quarterback, because the last thing you want to do is have him get hurt, even though there isn't much to play for at this point. The other thing that I wanted to note in terms of the offensive line, you just alluded to Jeff Schwartz. Just for clarification purposes to the Giants fan base, they have until 4 o'clock today to make a decision regarding Jeff Schwartz. They have to take him off short-term IR, and they have to put him on the active roster. If they don't do that by 4 p.m., Jeff Schwartz is done for the season. He has to stay on IR.
So, big decision for the Giants. I would imagine they're going to activate him, considering the Pugh injury. I don't know how you don't. I mean, even if he's not ready this week, and from what I understand, he should be. I mean, would you rather have Jeff Schwartz on the roster or James Brewer, who hasn't been active the whole year? Is that even a question?
Absolutely. It's not a question. And to be honest with you, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you know, what's the point of bringing Jeff Schwartz back? How about building some continuity for next season and looking at what offensive lineman you want to utilize?
And how about not getting Eli killed for the last 7 weeks of the year?
Well, that would be probably priority number one. But
God forbid he gets rolled over and he pops an ACL or something like that.
There's no need for that.
There's no need.
You should take that type of beating. Yeah. And if you don't want to put him in a position where he's going to make questionable decisions and force turnovers, you have to give him protection. That's been an issue.
All right, 201-939-4513. You guys have been waiting patiently. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry up. Get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home $10,000. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. By the way, I got that big night out at Kobe Fleener last night. You saw that?
I did see. It was for fantasy purposes. It helped that Dwayne Allen left the game. Let's not forget about that.
Well, sometimes you can predict things.
Well, I mean, Dwayne Allen.
Or you could have dumb luck, which
Or you could have bad luck where this guy advises you not to play Jonas Gray, and then he winds up getting four touchdowns.
Hey, Alfred Blue had a good game.
Alfred Blue did have a good game, but it was between Charles Sims and Jonas Gray. That was what the big decision was.
I did tell you to play Charles Sims. Well,
Jonas Gray, four touchdowns on the bench.
And I imagine you listened to me?
I did listen to you, yeah.
Oops!
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones at 201-939-4513.
Nice transition.
Yeah,
don't defend yourself on that one.
How can I? Though I don't think anybody expected Jonas Gray to do that.
Deep down inside, I'm not killing myself for that. Who would have expected that type of performance? The way New England rotates running backs, it's like, flip a coin. Good luck.
And how about the NFL yesterday? The Browns lose to the Texans. They're in first place. Marian Mallett's a rookie quarterback. The Bengals, after being embarrassed last week, go into New Orleans and beat up the Saints. The Broncos on turf, on a fast field, score 7 points against the Rams. I mean, you can't figure any of this stuff out anymore. You really can't. It's crazy.
Very up and down. And that's the parity of the league. And we've been talking about that week in and week out. You always have a fighting chance every Sunday.
And by the way, I think driving up the turnpike, I saw the Mark Sanchez bandwagon overturned in a in a gutter somewhere on the side of the turnpike.
Resorted back to his old tricks.
People are looking to the watch for Nick Foles now. 201-939-4513. Charles in New Mexico, you lead us off today, my friend. What's going on, Charles?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Charles.
Doing well, Charles. What you got?
Horrible, horrible yesterday. I mean, Eli, three of those on him, but I kind of agree with you. I mean, no protection. I've never seen a quarterback get hit, and sometimes you were watching the game, he got hit in the head, and there was no call. I mean, there was some helmet-to-helmet contact, and he was looking around for the flag, and he didn't get called for that. But also, let's go a little deeper. Let's just admit it. Season's over, all right? Maybe we can salvage something by beating the Eagles, Redskins, and Cowboys next week.
Yep.
But can we go through another offseason of Jerry Reese's picks that don't pan out? It's been 7 years. I mean, what do you think Marr and Tisch are thinking? Let's move on. Coughlin, he's been great. We have to move on, I think. I think it's time that we as fans can't take this anymore.
Well, Charles, despite my high standing within the organization, I have not been privy to the phone calls between Mr. Mara and Mr. Tisch. So I wish I could tell you what they were thinking, but to call Mr. Mara a guy that holds the cards pretty close to the vest, I think would be an understatement. I'm not sure anybody knows what he's thinking, except for maybe him and his brothers, Chris and Frank, who he obviously talks to about the team an awful lot. And obviously, you know, the folks on the Tisch side, Steve Tisch, Jonathan Tisch, and those guys. I'm sure they're frustrated. I'm sure they're angry. I'm sure they didn't like the fact that there are probably around 15,000 49er fans in that stadium yesterday. And who knows how many Cowboy fans are going to be in that stadium next week. That's got to rub them the wrong way. So if this team keeps losing games, I'm sure they'll have conversations. I know they love Tom Coughlin. They think he's a great coach, and I don't think they doubt he's a great coach. I know they're big fans of Jerry Reese. They like what he's done here. But like you said, the number of failures in the draft over the past 5-6 years have put this team in the position they're in now where they're going to miss the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. So I think there'll be conversations. If I told you I knew what they were thinking, I'd be wrong. But I will say this, and I think Lance would agree with me, Charles. At the press conference after the season last year, John Mara did not appear to be the most patient guy in the world. He did not seem to be happy. He did not seem willing to wait another year. So I got to imagine he is not very happy right now. And Lance, I got to imagine something's going to happen at the end of the year that's going to shake things up in one way, shape, or form, whether it's an assistant coach, a coordinator, something's going to change.
I would assume there will be change, to answer your question, Charles. How much change, that remains to be seen. If you go based on last season, right, and they were in a similar position where they started off 0-6, they struggled, they missed the playoffs. I mean, there was some turnover on the coaching staff. It didn't necessarily maybe appease to the fan base based on the tweets and the phone calls we received. I mean, the head coach and the GM are still in a position, but they did make changes to the coaching staff. They brought in new voices. They brought in a new offensive scheme. Yep. Do they want to do that again this season? I'm sure they're going to discuss that. However, you know, let me make this clear. You got a veteran quarterback. Do you want to make him go through another system for the third time in 3 years? I mean, I think that's something else that you need to ask yourself. Do you say that, well, if we didn't have the injury type of bad luck that played out this season, you know, could we have still been in the mix? I mean, these are the types of questions I think you need to ask yourself before you make these knee-jerk reactions. That's the best way you can go about it.
I understand totally there's been a lot of injuries, but, you know, just a horrible, horrible. Yesterday was just gut-wrenching, you know. We love our Giants, and to see Eli play like that, and get beat up and not be able to put it in. You know, and then, you know, Coughlin's little comment, oh, we should have ran in hindsight. I mean, all they do is put Eli in third and long, and they don't run the ball in first down at first and goal. You know, and like you said, 14-14 inside the goal line, that was kind of depressing.
Yeah, I hear you, Charles. Thanks for the call, my friend.
All right, buddy.
Thanks,
appreciate it. And look, it's frustrating. I get it. And maybe should they have ran the ball in retrospect? Yeah, I guess. But again, they've had so much success, and the ball's in two receivers' hands. Randall should have caught it, and Larry Donnell should have caught the ball. So the play calls aren't that bad if the players aren't making the plays.
It's execution. It's execution more so than play calling, just as it's personnel more so than scheme and coaching decisions. And we've been asked about that time and time again this season. I mean, I think you need to look at the type of players that are being thrown out there due to the injuries. I mean, is it really Perry Fuel not getting them in the right position? Is it Ben McAdoo not having a strong enough game plan? Or is it just players not making plays? I mean, I think every week, John, we start talking about, you know, if this guy makes a catch, if this guy makes a tackle. It comes down to the personnel. And that's what needs to change, and that's where they need to really hone in on and focus on this offseason. You got to get players in here that are going to make plays consistently and not give you a flash here or there. And the last call of Charles was bringing up the draft history and the draft track record. I'm going to bring up the 49ers draft this past season, John. And listen, the Giants have had some impactful players from this year's draft. Here's the Niners draft this year. And think about the players that were thrown into starting roles and have made game-changing plays every single week. You had Marcus Martin was their third-round pick. He's now their starting center because Daniel Kilgore got hurt. Chris Borland was their other third-round pick, and he's playing like a Pro Bowl-esque linebacker. The guy's got 48 tackles in the last 3 weeks. You look at Dante Johnson, who knocked the ball away from Preston Parker on that fourth-and-goal play. He was a fourth-round pick.
Aaron Lynch sacked Eli Manning, fifth-round pick.
Bruce Ellington, who was their main return guy, he was also a fourth-round pick. And Carlos Hyde was a second-round pick, who's now the change of pace back to Frank Gore.
What round was Will Hoyt picked in? I know he was
Will Hoyt was an undrafted guy 3 years ago. He's been with the team for quite some time.
You develop him.
3 years ago, undrafted. Yeah.
Is Mark Herzlick a starting linebacker and we're making plays like that for the Giants? Paysinger? You got to make the most of these middle-round picks and these undrafted free agents. That's how you get depth. That's how you survive Patrick Willis going out for the year. That's how you survive Nabar Borman going out for the year. That's how you survive Aldon Smith missing 10 games with a suspension. That's how you survive that. And the Giants simply haven't been able to plug and play guys like that. And I know this guy had a long drive home down the turnpike to Maryland, and I'm sure he's still seething right now, and that's Len down in Columbia, Maryland. Leonard?
Oh, wow. A lot of 49er fans there.
And Len, you know it's going to be worse next week.
It's going to be worse next week. That can't have made Mr. Mara very happy.
No, sir.
When you got the opposition's fans cheering for their team in your building, that's just not good.
Now, Len, if it makes you feel a little bit better, when the Cowboys had their home opener this year against the 49ers, there were about half the stadium was full of 49er fans, and Rome wanted to use a silent count in his own building. So at least it wasn't like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, a little history, for a lot of years, the 49ers were the only thing up there in the Northwest.
Yeah.
And so they've got a lot of fans, they got family history, and I mean, those people travel all over the United States, and they're working in New York. And, I mean, those weren't people who got on a plane to San Francisco and flew into the game.
Well, remember also, the Niners won a lot of games in the late 80s and early 90s with Montana and Steve Young. So you have all those bandwagon guys, too, that were young.
National fan base. Same thing with the Cowboys and the Steelers and the Giants.
And the Bears, for that matter.
I mean, those four or five organizations.
Listen, I said last week, these two games were going to be the franchise-changing games.
0-for-1.
This was going to be it. Decisions are going to be made next Monday morning if it doesn't turn out in the right way for the Giants.
And Len, let me tell you,
not that anything's going to happen before the season's over, but
right.
You can't have that in your own.
And
building.
Len, the real killer here too is that. Oh, looks like we lost Len there. Did it click? Yeah, great. Can we get that off the air, please? Thank you. It looks like, to me, what kills Giant fans the most is it seemed like they really had a chance to win that game.
Absolutely.
You're in the game. You have hope. Your defense keeps you in it to get the job done, and it just goes away. And if you want to give us a call back, we lost your line there. I'm not sure what happened. You can give us a call back. We'll throw you back on if you want to make another point. But
That's the killer, you know. Second half against the Colts, you could tell the Colts ran away with it. Second half, Seahawks, they ran away with
it.
Fourth quarter, Seahawks.
I mean, that game was still
competitive. Ran away with it. That's fair. Fourth quarter. I think that's more than fair. Eagles, you weren't in the game. This game, midway through the fourth quarter, you got the ball with a chance to take the lead inside the five, and you can't do it. This one sticks in your craw a little bit. This reminds me of the game last year against the Eagles, where you really should have won that game during that losing streak, the Bear game during that losing streak when they're driving it down, they throw the ball over Brandon Myers' head, and you can't come up with it. That was this type of game to me.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker when you have a legitimate chance to walk away with a victory and you can't come through. I'm going to go back to the conversations you and I have had, John, on this very program. Coming out of that winning streak, they're 3-2. So we start speculating about this killer stretch of the schedule. It's what Jerry Reese referred to as murderer's row during his midseason press conference.
Six tough games in a row.
Six tough games. But even after you lose to Philadelphia and Dallas and you go into the bye, the conversations we were having, you have four games coming up.
Go 2-2.
2-2. If you go .500, you still have a legitimate shot with that six-game stretch late in the season. Okay, so they lose the first two. Not the end of the world. You still have hope, but you have to win these next two games.
Right, and here's the thing, Lance. Even at 3-2, we talked about that six-game stretch. We said, look, 3-3 will be great, but even if you go 2-4 and you're sitting there at 5-6 with these final five games left on the schedule, you got a chance to go 10-6, and there's a decent shot you go 9-7. Now, the way they're playing, I wouldn't count on this team winning five in a row. I don't care if they're playing, you know, the Little Sisters of the Poor.
But based on paper, at least.
Yes, based on paper, you had a shot. But to go 0-5, I mean, and this goes back to what I've said a couple times over the course of this year. The Giants haven't beat a playoff-caliber team with their starting quarterback since 2012 when they beat Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. It's been 2.5 years, or 2 years now, I guess, because we're not done with this season yet. But, and frankly, you look at the rest of the Giants' schedule, the next chance they have to do it, in fact, their only last two chances they have of doing it, is beating Dallas and beating Philly. There's no other team is making the playoffs or even probably going .500. Though the Rams have been a pain in the rear end to a lot of teams.
They've been a turnaround team. Their defense, very strong lately.
You know, and it's taken a while for them to get going. They were my sleeper team before the year. Obviously, Bradford goes out, but the defense also started slowly. But they're a pain in the butt. And the Titans, by the way, they don't look too bad now either. We'll see how they play against the Steelers.
Well, all of these teams are dangerous because they're all playing for pride, and all these guys are playing for jobs
at
this point.
And they have young guys trying to prove themselves.
So that's what makes those teams dangerous. I mean, you could say, oh, they got nothing to play for mathematically. Yeah, the playoffs is not on the line. But you have guys that are hungry to jump out on film so that the coaches and the franchises have a reason to keep them around.
Well, let's try to roll through these callers. Nick in New Jersey. You're up next, Nick.
Hey, John, Lance. How you guys doing today after another tough loss?
What's up, Nick?
Doing well, Nick. What you got?
2 points real quick. One, I think the season's done. I mean, I pretty much knew it after the Eagles game. And I think the one bright spot of the season is that we know why the Giants wanted Odell Beckham. I mean, after yesterday's game, this kid can play.
I mean, honestly, I knew from 2 or 3 weeks ago the kid could play. And for all those Giant fans that were killing them for picking Beckham with that first pick in the draft, well, you know what? Do you still want the kid for, that's playing down in Carolina, or do you want Odell Beckham Jr.? Trust me, this kid is a real deal weapon, a wide receiver, and it looks like Jerry Reese is hit on that wide receiver in the first round, assuming he manages to stay healthy over the course of his career.
No, I agree with that. And that brings back to my second point. For everybody that wants to kill Coughlin and kill Fuel and kill McAdoo, look, the talent is not there. We don't have it. We lost our first stringers in so many ways. This is just not a playoff-winning team. So I think you got to look at Jerry Reese and the picks he's made and the undrafted free guys, and a lot of it's got to go with the personnel, not really the coaches. I mean, the coaches can only do so much.
I think you've had some coaching issues. I think you've had some issues coaching zone defense on that side of the ball. I think Carl Banks brought this up in the postgame show yesterday, Lance. A lot of the zone concepts they've struggled with on defense. Now, look, I'm not reading defenses on, you know, all 22 film. I'm going by what Carl Banks says, you know, Pro Bowl linebacker and former Giant great. So I'll trust what he says about them not understanding zone principles. But I think the bottom line is that when you line up, and you look at who the Giants are putting on the field, you compare them to who's lining up across the line of scrimmage from them, it's very rare where you say, you know what, the Giants are the more talented team here.
Yeah. But it goes back to personnel, John, and we're
I don't disagree.
We're not playing our first, second stringers. We got our third and fourth guys out there.
No, Nick, look, I think you're right.
And that's why you need to beef up the depth chart, Nick.
And thanks
that's
for the call,
on. And appreciate the call.
And you do that by drafting one of the middle
absolutely.
Rounds.
Absolutely. Or you also go out and get some undrafted guys, right. like more Victor Cruzes on defense. I mean, you don't necessarily have to make the big splash to get a strong roster. I mean, we just went through some of the Niners draft picks and the Michael Wilhoits of the world who were not, you know, big right. name guys coming out of school and so forth or had that type of resume. So, you know, there's different ways you could build an NFL team, John. There's no one right way to go right. about. New England has also plucked guys off the street and made stars yeah. out of them. So, I mean, you don't necessarily have to make a big splash and you don't always have to strike gold in the draft every single pick, but you need consistency. You need one or two guys every year that you bring in, you groom, and then when the princes of the world go down, you have confidence that you can slide this kid in and he can still keep that level of productivity at the same line.
And the free agent additions from this offseason haven't exactly been all-impact guys either. Now, a lot of that has to do with injury, and it's hard
of course,
to predict
yeah.
that. You know, you go down the list of all the guys that we've done a million times, not going to do it again. But the guys that did come in at low cost and are healthy, the John Jerrys, the Charles Browns, have these guys given you as much as you might want. That's something you can review the tape and decide for yourself.
Well, just real quick before we go back to calls, John, Robert Ayers is probably the one guy
correct.
Who stayed healthy and he was a free agent signing where you say, hey, you're getting some bang for your buck. Outside of that,
Cromartie's,
very tough.
Cromartie has
well,
fought
DRC,
through that injury
correct.
Pretty well.
Well, I guess DRC I'm putting in a separate category.
This big
he's
money guy?
Name big
okay.
money guy.
That's fair.
Robert Ayers, you didn't necessarily, you know, give up the entire salary cap for him. He comes in. He's coming from a winning program in Denver. Guy goes out there, he makes plays.
And I guess it depends what your expectations were, and I never expected Jameel McClain to be some Pro Bowl player. He's gone out there, been versatile, and he's been a vocal guy. You know, does he make a ton of plays? No, but I think he's been that type of depth linebacker that you need. But I'm not sure you want him starting every down for you. I think he's a guy you bring in certain situations, you have him be a core special teamer. I'm not sure if he's a guy you want playing 75 defensive snaps a game. But, you know, or if you have two really good linebackers, maybe he can be your third guy, but he can't be your best linebacker out there. You know what I mean?
And that's what happens when you yeah. lose John Beeson.
Right.
I think the Giants envisioned the exact way that you just laid things out. Well, we have Beeson in the middle, so McClain could be a guy we move around.
He's a support player.
In different situations, correct.
201-939-4513. Stas in Washington. Stas, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up, Stas?
Hello, Stas, what you got?
Hey, so just a quick few things. I love that you guys talked about Devon Kennard earlier because I was watching his play yesterday, and he is so true to the future of linebackers and the Giants. That guy, he plays with so much, like, oomph about how he hits and how he runs to the ball. You could tell he's even hitting the grass hard when he runs, and I like that. You know, like
he looks like a keeper. He looks like a
yeah,
keeper.
Yeah, he definitely is. And the thing about it is, it's like I've never called up here, guys, and said, "Hey, fire this guy, fire that guy." I don't have to tell somebody that we need to let them go, respectfully. And I really think it's prayer fuel. And it is our only reason. He's been our D coordinator now for, what, 4 or 5 years?
I think this is his fourth season. I think fourth season. 11, 12,
okay.
13. Was he your entire
how come,
I'm looking it up just to confirm.
How come,
continue, Stas, we're listening.
I'm sorry. How come we still have players that grew up in his system playing out of place? How can we still have miscommunications on defense? Like, I understand the talent thing, but there's just bad technique. There is bad angles. There's not being in the right place where the ball is. There's a lot of stuff that you go, okay, if you got beat physically, that happens. You're not always going to be the most physically talented person on the field. I get that. But when you're just not where you're supposed to be, when the middle field is always wide open, they gave an interesting stat. Where every other yesterday, when you're watching the game and broadcast, and every other team's issue is outside the numbers, right?
Right.
But the Giants are outside of the numbers actually are very stingy.
They don't cover the middle of the field well. You're right.
Yeah, but that was it last year. That was it the year before
right.
that. That was even the year we won the Super Bowl. That was always the case. And it's like, okay, what are you not doing, coach? Where this is, I mean, there's been several different linebackers that's rolled in through here now, right? And here's the thing, okay, linebacker Michael Bowley, we caught him at the end of his career. I get that. But he was a sound player. That was a Pro Bowl linebacker at one point. And he was out of place at times. Like, what's going on with this system that isn't working? And how come every year there's a simplification, and then every year we go through the same growing pains? Like, it just gets so annoying.
Nice.
I can stand being beat. I cannot stand being outthought. That bothers me.
Thank you, Stas. Appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks. All
right. And it is Perry Fuel's fifth season, just real quick for clarification.
And from time to time, I don't think Stoss is wrong. I don't think it's consistent thing every week. I don't think that's fair. Like this week, they did a very good job of slowing down the Niners' offense. But I think you've seen too many instances over the last 5 years where you scratch your head and you're like, you know, you're watching the Giants players scratch their heads where they're looking at each other. And they're like doing the mime thing on the field and they're trying to figure out what's going on.
I think part of it is injuries, but, you know, you can't use that as the major excuse because even with all the personnel moving in and out, all right, guys should at least understand the scheme.
Right.
It has been a troubling aspect, and that's why they're one of the worst teams this season in allowing big plays, whether it be on the ground in the middle or whether it be through the air in the middle. I think if you look at the personnel on paper, just to examine what Stoss is saying, you know, Prince and DRC are good cover guys. So you can understand why you're strong outside the numbers.
Right.
Then you look at the personnel inside. That's where the personnel, there's a slight drop-off
besides
compared
role.
To the corners.
Right.
So, I mean, from a common sense perspective, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It is frustrating, though, that 1 year to the next, you still see the same troubling aspect.
But I will say this. They cleaned up a lot of those mistakes the last 10 games of last year.
Yeah,
they got the last 10 games last year. They stopped the run. They prevented big plays. And they were good in the middle of the field, Stoss. They really were. They got a lot better. And why? Let's examine. Roll is still there. Same guy, right? Jaquan Williams is still there. Same guy. Oh, that's a big name.
Good point.
Will Hill was there last year. Is Quinton Nemes or Stevie Brown in the league that Will Hill's in terms of a football player at safety? Not. And John Beeson's not there. Is Jameel McClain in the same level as John Beeson as a football player when Beeson's 100%? It's not. And I think that's the type of thing that you look at. 201-939-4513. John in D.C. John, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Lance and John.
Hey,
look, I'm upset that Eli threw five picks, but I'm not shocked because it's like every year he averaged one game when he threw about five.
Nah,
or four
it's
picks.
True. He does. You're right.
Right. You know what I'm saying? He gives you that one game every year.
You're not wrong.
So I'm not shocked.
You're not wrong.
You just wait for it and you check it off the list. That's
and it's funny, John. I actually brought it up before the Seahawks game, and I think I said it on the air. He was due for one of these games, and I thought it was going to come last week in Seattle. I was a week early.
He gives you one every year, so that's not even. I'm not even upset about that. He do it every year. What I'm mad about, I'm not even upset about the play calls in the red zone that they threw, the three phase and then a little short. I'm not upset about that. What I'm upset about is how it was fourth and inches, and we couldn't get inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm upset about. And it's another thing. I'm upset about all these fans who call week after week your show and complain about Pew. Now, when Pew went down, what did you see?
No, that's true.
Right. They couldn't protect. Duke couldn't protect Eli at all. But they complained about how bad Pew been playing. But then as soon as Pew went down, you see what happened.
Hey, look, John,
out there.
I'm not defending Pew. I'm not calling him a Pro Bowl caliber player. And in fact, I think he might eventually end up being a guard. I'm not sure if he has the ability to stay out there at tackle the rest of his career. I've lost a little bit of confidence with him over the course of the year. But look, to say there isn't a gigantic drop-off between John Pugh and Charles Brown is not paying attention because you saw how much worse that side of the offensive line looked once Charles Brown checked into the game.
Duke couldn't get his hands on it. Charles Brown couldn't put his hands on
it. Dude, there was the one play where he literally got pushed back into Eli Manning's lap, and he almost fell on top of him. It was bad.
And there was another play to throw John Jerry into this ball of fun when he actually tackled Rashad Jennings. So, I mean, I'm not trying to make this a comic routine, but there were some plays where you were like, oh, my goodness, what is going on here today? So, John, I mean, you're not far off point. I'll give you brownie points for that. So,
right. Another thing I have to say, I do not want Toffolin gone yet because I'm like I told John last week, I'm in the Ben McAdoo offense. I know if Tom leaves, the new coach coming, Eli might have to learn a whole new offense. And I'm liking the offense that I'm seeing now.
So do I. I like it too.
So, you know what I'm saying? I'll be upset if he let Coughlin go because I know a new coach going to come in and he's probably going to want a new offensive coordinator.
Now, John, the only hope he has is if you bring in a defensive-oriented head coach and then maybe you can convince him to keep McAdoo around. That's the only way it could possibly happen. But I think if you go that route, that would probably be a younger head coach, and I'm not sure if the Giants want to bring in like a first-time head coach to try to win in the last few years of Eli Manning's prime, which is really a thing here too. How quickly can you rebuild this team around Eli so that you can give yourselves a chance to win while Eli is still Eli? And I think that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I got another quick before I let you I let you guys go. Another thing, another point that I made. People always say that Ben McAdoo doesn't make adjustments, but if you watch the game last night, he really did.
Yes, he did.
Ruben Randle, let me tell you something. Outside the numbers, it's terrible. Ben McAdoo picked that up and started making all slant routes, all across the middle. And across the middle, if you can hit Ruben in stride, he's a great wide receiver in the middle. Between the numbers, he's great. Outside the numbers, he's terrible. Ben saw that, changed it up, and what happened? We got production out of Ruben.
I don't mean to cut you off. I think it gets back to the fact that I was talking about this with Schmelk earlier, the fact that when you get Randle out in space, when you just give him open space, he's a different receiver than when you're just trying to toss it or heave it down the field and hope that he does
it. Yeah, Ruben Randle doesn't do well on contested balls outside. If you get him in movement, get him some space inside going across the field, he plays a lot better.
All right, thank you guys for taking my call.
Hey, yeah, thank you for calling, John. Good call, John. And, you know, he's right. Look, and I'm not trying to absolve Eli from five interceptions. That's not what I'm doing here. But based on the history, he usually has one of these games each year where it's like, oh, boy.
If you look at his career numbers, I mean, he's a guy that takes more chances than the typical quarterback. He very rarely plays it conservative. I mean, this season was the first where, you know, they tried to rein him back in. It's always frustrating when your starting quarterback throws five interceptions. You should never want to see that. However, when you look at the course of his career, you know, he has had games where, you know, he'll give you some of these great game-changing plays. At the same time, he'll throw some passes that really makes you scratch your head. It was one of those games. With that being said, they're still in a position to win that game, regardless of all of the mishaps. And there were guys that could have made plays to win the game. It just didn't add up yesterday.
You know what the funny thing is? For a while this year, I thought Eli might be on route to like a 27-touchdown, 12-interception type of year where he really improves on that, and he completes 64-65% of his passes. His numbers have really gone back to his career norms right now. He's a 61% passer right now. Right now, it's 61.2. That would be his best completion percentage since 2011. He's averaging only 6.8 yards per reception, which would be his lowest number since 2008, which I think shows you the change in the offensive system. 18 touchdowns, 11 picks, which is basically in line with his 2012 and 2011 seasons where he finished with about 26, 27 touchdowns and 16 picks. So he's kind of in line to do that again, depending on how he ends the year. And he's thrown 11 picks. He has an 85.4 quarterback rating, which is kind of the area he's been in his average season. So he's kind of regressed. Maybe not regressed isn't the right term, but returned to the mean of where he usually has been in his career.
Well, I'm looking at his stat numbers. Seven of his seasons in the NFL, he's had at least 15 interceptions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's pretty much the norm.
That's what he is.
That's what you take. At the same time, you get a lot of benefits from Eli Manning.
Oh, big plays.
But,
yeah.
You know, the interceptions is not something that jumps off the page and like, oh, my God, where did this come from? It's his style of play. Just like you look at Brett Favre's numbers. Hey, he gave you those game changers, and they gave you a lot of throws. You were like, oh, my God, what was he thinking?
But I did hope that the system would maybe reduce that, and we'll see. Maybe he'll only throw two picks the rest of the year. He went through, what, a six-game stretch this year. He threw one interception.
Like four and a half games without
he
a
might
pick.
Only throw one more pick the rest of the year. Right. Then 13 interceptions would be a great total for him the rest of the year, so we'll have to see what happens. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 football fantasy contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now to enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Let's go back to our phone calls and say what's up to Brian out in California. Brian, what's going on, pal? Thanks for holding.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey,
no problem.
Concerning all the 49er fans at the stadium, you know, I go to a lot of, being on the West Coast, I go to a lot of Giant away games that are close to the West Coast, and we travel no one travels like Giant fans. We invade the stadium. It's all good.
Yeah,
so,
Brian, that Charger
it's
game.
It's happening to us now. Well, I guess we got to grin and bear
it,
right?
Brian, that Charger game last year, there were a lot of Giant fans in that stadium in San Diego, so you're 100% right.
Yeah, I would just want to make a couple points.
Sure.
I love Odell Beckham. I think he's going to be similar to like a Larry Fitzgerald or even better than him. But I got to tell you, when we drafted him one ahead of Zach Martin, my heart sunk, because being a long-term Giant fan since the late 60s, Giant football is predicated on building an offensive line. You know, Eli goes down six times. We'll never establish a run. Eli's fantastic when we can get a running game going. it's just not going to happen. I mean, why can't we start looking at offensive linemen in the draft and start putting them, you know, higher priority, more so than what we've been doing? I know Beckham's great, and I love him, and he's going to be on ESPN week in and week out, but I'd rather get the W's, you know, and establish that run game. What are your thoughts on that?
Brian, I'll say
perhaps
this.
Zach Martin.
I think it's easier to find the Zach Martin in the draft, and I think you'll find a Zach Martin in the draft every year where maybe you're not going to have an Odell Beckham Jr. in every year's draft. Now, you can't go wrong with either pick. If the Giants came out of the draft with Zach Martin, great. He's probably been the best offensive lineman from that draft class so far this year. And frankly, Beckham, you could argue, you know, I guess Mike Evans has probably been a little bit better since he's been healthy the whole year, but Beckham's probably been the second best wide receiver in this draft class. He's probably been better than Sammy Watkins, wouldn't you say? So far this year, it's close.
Absolutely, in terms of consistency.
You know, Adams and Bryan have both played well. Moncrief's had some moments, and Brandon Cooks has been pretty good. But Beckham is right there with the top wide receiver. So I get where you're coming from, and I agree with you. I think now the number one goal for me this season, and I've jumped on the Paul DeTino bandwagon and, you know, crossed my heart. I apologize for that. But
well, you have to have that.
To me, you have to invest in a big-time offensive tackle. I think you have to go out there, whether it's your first-round pick or it's a free agent. I think you got to bring in a top offensive tackle to try to solidify that offensive line. I don't think you have much of a choice, Lance.
Well, you're now going through season number two in a row, John, where you've had issues on the offensive line. If you can't see the writing on the wall after that, I don't know what else you need to all of a sudden say, hey, we need a star-studded offensive line.
You know what? But you thought for a little while that Beattie and Pugh might be able to be those bookends for the next few years. I think I might be off that bandwagon a little bit.
Well, yeah, guys, I agree.
Depth,
I mean, I love
depth.
Boston College and I love Syracuse. I know Coughlin likes to look towards those colleges, but we have to expand our horizons. Pugh would probably be a great guard, but he's just not going to make it as tackle, and I'm glad we're recognizing that.
I'm with you. Brian, I appreciate the call. Thanks for holding, pal.
All right, Brian.
All right, Brian. Thanks, Ben.
You need depth. I don't think you can look at it, John, where, okay, on paper we have two guys that are going to start. They go down via an injury, you at least have another guy to step in.
Hey, and it's great then. Pugh could be like David Deal. You expect him to play a guard, but if someone goes down a tackle, you slide him out. There's nothing wrong
with that.
I
mean, if anything, it's not so much the starters. It's the fact that, you know, who do you have confidence on the bench, on the second group of five offensive linemen that you can plug in the event one of your regulars goes down?
Yeah, develop a Kevin Booth. Heck, remember when the only reason David Deal was your starting left tackle in 2011 is because Will Beattie got hurt. And you had to move him out there, and he helped win the Super Bowl because he was versatile to do that. If Justin Pugh can be that guy, be a starting guard, and move out the tackle when you need him, fantastic. He has taken the cobwebs off the phone. He's come out of the basement. He's put down the podcast, and he's calling into Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Wow, how honored we are.
It is Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. How you doing, Shakes? It's been like a month and a half.
No, it hasn't, man. I called in last week.
Oh, you did? I missed that one.
Yeah.
What's up, Shakes? How are you, buddy? I'm doing fantastic. How's the shakedown treating you?
Oh, it's great.
Good.
It's great.
Excellent.
I got a few points here. I wanted to ask you something first, though. You said we went 14 for 14 goal line?
Yeah, inside the 5-yard line, goal to go. The Giants were 14 to 14 before the game yesterday.
That's not fade routes, right?
They actually have completed a lot of fade routes in that situation. I think Danelle was, what, 4 or 5 touchdowns on fade routes this year?
Well, listen, this is what I was afraid of back in June, the powder puff. And y'all know what I call the powder puff, that fluff, that soft stuff. Look, when you get into the goal line, you got to be a man down there. You got to run it down their throats, man. You got to impose your will down there. You can't be sitting there floating the balls, being powder puff. We're not a powder puff team. Well, Giants football is bang 'em hard.
Yeah, Shakes.
You put Williams in there, man. Mm-hmm. Williams is a goal line, short yardage dude.
But
you
Shakes,
put him in there. Put Hanowski in there. And run the ball and goal line situation.
Yeah, but Shakes, real quick. The one issue the Giants have had consistently this year on both sides of the ball now, and it's probably the biggest reason among all others that they're 3-7, they can't win the battle at the line of scrimmage. They haven't done it all year long. You know that.
Yeah, but this is all year long. This is what I've been seeing from the Giants, is that when we get in short yard situations, we still got Jennings back there, and we expect Jennings to get the first down. No, you got to be a hard-nosed runner like Williams to get that short yardage. You're gonna be you gotta be able to man up down there.
I mean, Jennings does weigh 230 pounds, Shakes. He's not a small guy.
Yeah, he does, but he's still soft.
Ah, Rashad Jennings isn't soft. I don't think
he's
that's
soft.
Fair.
He's soft, man. He's not no hard nosed runaway. He's pounding over people.
Well, but
that's
but
what
Shakes,
Williams is. He pounds over.
Shakes, here's
he's
the thing.
He's a pounder. He's a bruiser.
Shakes,
that's a power back.
I understand that you want a big back, and I'm with you on that. But if we learned anything yesterday, regardless of whether it's fourth and inches, fourth and ten.
Jennings is the better
line,
back.
I don't really think it makes a difference who's back there. I think it comes back to the offensive line, Shakes. That's where the issue is.
Oh, it does. It does. It starts there.
Good point.
It starts there, Lance. It starts there.
You've had
but
the
again,
same trouble with both backs behind you.
Yeah, I think that Williams will probably get that yard, though. I think Williams will get that inch. That's my opinion.
You could be right. I'm not sure.
You could be right.
You could
yeah.
be right. I'm
just,
not sure.
I'm going based on the trend. I haven't seen much of a difference other than what Jennings did during that three-game winning streak. It's been very mediocre, the production, no matter who's been back there.
Yeah, well, they don't give him much time in the short yardage to me. And I've seen it from the beginning of the season, and I've been saying it. But, yeah, that's my point, though, man. When you get into the goal line, though, you got to pound it down there, man. That three straight fade routes is unexcusable. It is. I shouldn't. When you get down to the goal line, you got momentum. ODB makes the most incredible catch that is going to be on top tens for a long time in SportsCenter. And then you got momentum, and you get down there, and you throw three straight fade routes? Three?
Well, Shakes, I will say this. And this is how I'll phrase it, so I hope it makes sense for you. If the Giants would have had that series of plays in that situation in week one, all right, I would have been just as furious as you, and I would have said it doesn't make any sense and it's terrible play calling. But considering the success they've had with those exact types of plays over the course of the year, I get why they did what they did. Would I have run the football at least once inside the five? Yes, I would have. I'm not going to argue that. But again, considering their track record of success this year, I have a hard time giving them too much grief over those play call decisions.
Can I piggyback off of that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you say that then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't think that defensive coordinators is watching that? You don't think that the defensive coordinator is doing film on that? Oh, when you get into the goal line, this is what you want to do. This is what you've been doing all year. So you don't switch it up?
That's fair, but Shakes, did Larry Donnell have the ball in his hands on the way to the ground?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Should have caught the ball.
He should have caught that. But still,
so the play worked.
Fade routes is unexcusable.
But Shakes,
it is.
Shakes, if Donnell catches the ball he's supposed to catch, if Reuben Randall makes a decent catch on the play before and makes a play on the ball, that means the plays worked. They were open. The players just didn't make the play that was there to make. But I get your point. If I was the guy holding the headset, I would have called the run too. I think Tom Coughlin said in the postgame press conference, I'm not, you know, breaking any news here. I get your point. Do you want to touch on anything else in the game before we say goodbye?
Yeah, no. And you said they was open, they wasn't open. It was all contested and they all
had to outleap somebody. It was man on man coverage though. You know, it's not as if Eli was throwing into a double team guy.
Good defense.
But don't you
it was
expect
a lot of contact. You seen
correct.
That?
But, Shakes, if you're a quarterback and you have one-on-one coverage with your receiver, you have confidence that the guys around you are going to make plays. Doesn't Odell Beckham make plays when he has one-on-one coverage?
Yeah.
So,
but
you have to have some
faith. In the goal line. You got to be a man down there.
No, I hear you, Shakes.
And I don't think that's the wrong claim.
I hear you.
Versatility is good. And appreciate
no
the
doubt,
phone
man.
Call, Shakes.
Thank you, Shakes. Good
nice
to hear from you, my friend.
All right, I will.
Long time no speak.
Absolutely. It's nice to change things up, and everybody wants versatility, and I would have had no problem if they would have ran the ball once or twice or even, you know, just run a different type of route. I mean, I don't think that is asking for too much at all. And even Tom Coughlin addressed it and said it wasn't unreasonable to look back and say, hey, you know what, maybe we should have ran it. But at the end of the day, you know, if Eli Manning is throwing it to a guy that's got one-on-one coverage, it comes down to the player making a better play than the guy opposite him. And there were chances to make plays, John, and they just couldn't come through.
And frankly, Donnell's made that play most of the time this year. So I understand them trusting him. Randall, he hasn't been great on those fade routes. You know, Beckham, they tried him first. Didn't work. It was a bad throw. He didn't get off. Niners, I thought, did a good job bumping up at the line of scrimmage. I don't think it was a great pass either. But to me, Donnell's the one you zero in on there. That play's worked all year. I don't see why he wouldn't try it again.
Well, and from a physicality standpoint, John, he's big enough that he should win those battles.
Yeah, how big was the corner? 6'1"? That was on
not
him.
Not a big guy.
And Donnell's 6'7",
yeah,
and he's stronger than him. So there you go. All right, two calls before we say goodbye. We'll go to David in North Carolina next. David, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, David.
You guys touched on a lot of points that I was going to comment on, so I'll try to get to this one that I haven't heard yet.
Sure.
In about halfway through the show.
Got it.
I haven't been too hard on this guy because I've seen the effort there week in and week out. But the last couple weeks, I didn't know if maybe you guys had some insight on if there's an injury there or what. The last 2 weeks, you know, where's JPP been? To me, that motor hasn't been there the last couple weeks. I mean, he probably had a decent amount of tackles against Seattle just because they had so many plays and ran the ball. But I thought even though he wasn't getting a lot of pressure this year, I saw that guy motoring down the line, you know, giving great effort, play in and play out. And I just felt like I didn't see it, you know, this past Sunday. And when a team is struggling like we are, you got to have guys like Eli and JPP. They can't be the weak links.
David, it has been an issue over the course of the last three seasons where you'll see JPP come out one game, make a big play, and I think we saw a couple of pretty good games in a row from him in the middle of the season. But the last 2 weeks, it might be a little strong, so I'll apologize ahead of time, but it's the best phrase I can use. I think he's pulled a little bit of a disappearing act. He hasn't been mentioned a lot during the broadcast. He's not making plays in the backfield. He's not putting pressure. I'm not even asking for a sack. How about just forcing the quarterback to get rid of the ball quick? The one play he made last week, he was the one that stripped Lynch from behind on that run towards the end of the game where the Giants couldn't recover the second consecutive fumble on that drive. But look, I think, David, you're right. I think JPP needs to make more plays and, you know, make a big play. You know, make a play like he did against the Packers 2 years ago where he, you know, picked off Rodgers or picked off Tolzien, rather, and returned it for a touchdown. Make a difference-making play on defense. We have not seen nearly enough of those from JPP yet this year.
We've seen them here or there, but yeah. We haven't seen consistency. I mean, that's the big thing with JPP. You can't really fault him for his ability to stop the run.
No, he's been good
all year.
I don't
think that's something he gets enough credit for. You would like to see a quarterback hit here or there, a sack here or there, and it comes, you know, whenever he has an opportunity or a favorable matchup. But, you know, the good players, the defensive linemen, John, that could separate themselves from the rest of the pack, they are always a force. They always show up in the box score every week.
Osa used to have 7 to 8 strip sacks a year. We haven't seen one of those, or maybe one early in the year from Jason Pierre-Paul, a strip sack maybe, or not even one this year.
I'll
to go back and look
one.
At it. I don't remember one. So you're right, David. You got to get more plays than that.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you know, the most troubling thing about the season is, you know, we got some work on our hands with this roster, but some of the guys that you want to hang your hat on, now you just feel like, man, you just don't know. I mean, like you say, I don't think he's got enough credit for his play against the run. And I even thought earlier in the year he was getting some pressure, but we just wasn't getting much of a push up the middle. But, yeah, I just wondered if maybe something was nicked up or something we didn't know about. And then the other,
I
wanted to make was if Schwartz is able to get into a game this year, and you made a great comment, John, about thinking, you know, once again I go back to thinking – guys that you think you have, you maybe really don't have.
Right.
And I was like you, okay, hey, we've got Will Beatty on the left side. We've got Justin Pugh on the right side. When Schwartz comes back, I haven't been totally impressed with J.D. Walton. Do you give Richburg a shot at center? I would like to see what the kid could do at center, get him some snaps, get him some playing time. I mean, we've seen young centers come in this league before and play well. I know the offensive line is such a mess. Maybe – you'd rather have both of them at guard, but with the season kind of a lost cause, would it be worthwhile to put Schwartz at one of the guard spots, Richburg at center, and live with Jerry at the other guard spot? What do you guys think about that? And I'll take it off the air.
Well, I think that you could maybe have Schwartz replace Jerry.
See, that's my thought.
I think I would do.
I think Walton's probably a better player than Jerry, but I do think if you want to get the most out of your second-round pick, Weston Richburg, you got to put him at center at some point. Whether it's this year or next year, you got to get him to the place he's most comfortable at some point.
Well, it's not as if you locked up J.D. Walton for 10 years.
Well, I got him for 2 years, though. I mean, do you want to wait till his third year in the league to give your second-round pick a chance to play his natural position?
Next year, I think it's something that they could look to have him play full-time. I mean, I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference this season. You have the entire offseason to play him strictly at center. But remember, it gets back to the conversations we had with Kevin Booth. I mean, even though you want to see him at center, you still don't want him to lose focus on his guard assignments, because there's going to come a time where somebody else gets hurt and you're going to have to move Richburg back to guard.
Yeah, but look, I don't think Richburg – I think Richburg's had a similar season as that Pugh had last year at tackle, except I think Richard's probably been even a little less effective at guard this year. I think he's a center. I don't think he's a guard. I think at some point you got to put this guy at the position he was drafted to play.
I just think you could develop him in the offseason.
I think that's fair.
Right now,
I think that's totally fair.
Think the big concern is to just bring Schwartz back so you can put Richburg at center. I think it is have the top five guys on the offensive line right now out there. And John Jerry and Charles Brown did not live up to expectations. So if you could bring Jeff Schwartz off IR, the right side is where I'd focus on right now, as opposed to moving Richburg and J.D. Walton around.
Assuming Pugh is healthy, I put Pugh at right tackle, Schwartz at right guard, and then you keep the rest of the line.
That's exactly how I would do it. For the remainder of this season. Then in the offseason, you start toying with things.
Now, if Pugh's not back, do you mess around with Schwartz at right tackle? I mean, you can do a couple different things there.
If Pugh's not back, you know, that all of a sudden changes the conversation. And then, you know, maybe you can look to move Schwartz to the tackle spot.
But with that toe, does he have enough mobility to play tackle?
That's also something that needs to be weighed.
I don't know,
he's been at the guard spot most recently
for a couple of years now. Yeah.
He has had tackle experience, but guard is where he's more familiar with in the last few years. That's why I would bring him back as a guard for the time being, and then you go from there. I wouldn't necessarily get into a position where, hey, let's just, you know, throw everybody into different spots just because they're healthy. You still want to keep some continuity.
All right, Drew, we're over time. Give us your two big points. You can call us back tomorrow with the rest of them, and then we got to say goodbye, okay?
Yeah, man, what's up, man?
Go ahead, Drew.
Doing well, Drew. What you got?
All right, man. A lot of guys said a lot of things, kind of stole a lot of my thunder, so I am going to get to my point.
Yes.
First and foremost, man, it's criminal that we're wasting Eli's in his prime year. We got to get this O-line fixed, man. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I agree. Drew, 100% right.
You know, Eli I'll say Eli cost us the game, but we still had a chance to win. You know, I'm a huge Eli fan, so all of the callers that's going to call in and say blah, 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 you already know I'm an Eli fan.
Hey, Drew, you know what? The funny thing, Drew, we haven't gotten one call killing Eli yet today, which I'm shocked by. I thought we would have people lining up with clubs and knives, but we haven't had that this morning. I can't believe it.
Yeah, me too. I'm really surprised to that, and that's good.
I'm also happy
about
people
are starting to recognize.
Right.
But again, man, like I said, you know, it's criminal. And honestly, I'm frustrated, and we got to take a look at Jerry Reese, because you guys are hitting it on the head. His second, third, fourth round picks, man, we can't get anything done. And, I get you. We got to go. So it's criminal with the offensive line. It's criminal that we're wasting Eli and this old line. And last thing, man, you got to run the ball down in that end zone. I understand people got to make plays, and you're 1,000% right. You got to run the ball at these points. Later, guys.
Thank you, Drew. And I'll say this. You got to run the ball successfully inside the five. And you know what? Does it help you if you run for -1 yards and you get pushed back a yard on first down? Because, frankly, the way this team's run the ball this year, that's a pretty likely outcome, to be quite honest with you.
They've not
run the ball well. Run the ball well, and then I'll be much more in favor of running the ball inside the five. They haven't run the ball in 6 weeks.
Well, and that's why the first thing that came to mind when we were looking back at the four-play sequence in the goal line, does it say more about how the team looks at its running game right now?
That's a great point.
Or is there another factor? I mean, you know, we're saying, well, in an ideal world, they should have ran the football. For all we know, the coaching staff says to themselves, we can't run the ball outside the red zone. We can't run the ball inside the red zone. So at this point, we might as well just abandon that facet of our team. I mean, that could be a conversation that happens. I'm not saying that that should be a philosophy, but they may have lost confidence with this running game. You're now 10 games into the season, John. Do you really think you're going to pull a 180? You got Rashad Jennings back. I know he's not 100% healthy. I still say it goes back to the offensive line. You want to change this guy. You want to change that guy. You have to win the battle in the trenches. You don't do that. It doesn't matter whether you're 5 yards away, you're 25 yards away. You're still not going to run the ball effectively.
This is about 3 weeks in a row now, real quickly before we say goodbye, that the Giants have been well over 60%. I have to double-check the numbers, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. I think it's minimum 64% or higher past the run ratio. 64% pass to run. So they've maybe not given up on the run, but they've understood that they can't have success with it, and they have to try to move the ball in other ways. And We talked about all year. When you abandon the run and you have to throw the ball 45 times in the game, what's going to happen? You're going to get your quarterback hit, and you're going to turn the football over. What happened against the 49ers? You got your quarterback hit, and you turn the football over. It's only a matter of time when you can't run the football and you throw it 40, 50 times, Lance. That's the stuff that's going to happen.
And it also, that ratio does not come in games where they've been down by, let's say, 20 points in every game, John. These have been close
games.
They've
been in the game every week.
At least entering the fourth quarter or the third quarter. Yeah. So, you know, if you're down by three touchdowns, you say, fine, hey, abandon the run. If you're still in it, you know, that Cowboys game, until the fumbles came in the fourth quarter, you're in that game. Against the Seahawks, until that blow up in the fourth quarter, you're in that game. You're certainly in the game yesterday. It's not as if all of them have been lopsided affairs late in this contest.
I mean, even halftime of the Colts game, I think it was something like 19 passes and 10 runs. So, I mean, you're looking at a ratio where you're throwing the ball a lot more than you're running it. Lance, we'll be back tomorrow.
Sounds good.
We'll continue to take your calls, and we begin to look ahead to Giants and Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We will see you tomorrow at noon right here on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no call?